right, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Free For All. I'm your host, Big John, and this week we're flying solo. No guests this week. We're in between guests. We had Mike Termott on last week, had a great show with him, talked about some of the direct issues, also addressed questions that the audience had. Next week, we've got Spike Cohen lined up, but in between this week, you just got little old me. And for those of you that sent me some notes, yes, Chase Oliver was expected to be on, like we said during last week's show, with Mike Termott to address your questions. But unfortunately, he came down with some sort of conflict. I am working with his media director to get him on the show soon as we're able, rather. And so look forward to having Chase here to ask you, to answer your questions directly. So once again, if you have any questions for the show, as I sit here during my monologue, feel free to send us a comment, send us a question, some feedback, or just overall love or hate. It's all good. Just go to YouTube, Rumble, or Facebook, rather. X still doesn't quite work with StreamYard's API, so you could watch the show on X, but you won't be able to send us, I won't be able to see any of your questions directly during the show. So if you get the chance, send us some questions. That's for sure. Okay. What I wanted to talk about this week is the continued sideshow that's been going on involving the LP, its ticket for president and vice president, Chase Oliver, Mike Termott, still feeling the effects of a lot of negativity from within the party. Obviously, this originates from the Mises Caucus, largely, if not entirely. Clearly, Chase is not their preferred candidate. That was obvious. But what's interesting here is the reaction they're having to Chase being the nominee. So clearly, they would rather, in my opinion, see it all burned down, which is very interesting to me. So when the Mises Caucus took over in 2022, there were a lot of people, myself included, who kind of viewed them as, for lack of a better term, teenagers who got the keys to the car for the first time, or the kids who were left alone when their parents went away on a trip and they're left alone in the house for the first time. So they get the keys to the liquor cabinet and they're having a party, right? So again, this is my interpretation, and I'm not a party insider. I'm not a delegate. I'm not officially affiliated with any local party. So I'm just talking about someone who's been a libertarian voter for the last 30 years or so, and as someone just observing what was going on. So when they took over, again, it seemed to me like, hey, kudos to them. They marshaled whatever resources they had. They marshaled whatever resources they were given, and they were able to, like, it was a takeover. There's no other way to state it. It was a takeover. It was brilliant maneuvering at the time. You know, you can't take anything away from them, even if I don't agree with them. So when I say they took over, I don't mean that part as a negative. They did what they had to do. They want to mold the party in their image, which is fine. So that's okay. They took over and we said, okay, let's see what they do. At least I said, let's see what they do. I still am extremely wary of them. And I think a lot of my initial fears, misgivings, I'm not sure how to categorize it, have come true. I don't think any of them in their positions of power have changed their attitudes. Some have, but not all. But here's what we said. We said, well, you know, and I think Heiss said this during a recent interview in Reno. He said something along the lines of, you'll know us by our fruits, or the fruits we bear, or something to that effect. And okay, let's look at it 2 years later. You'll always get debate on this because there's no, quote, official numbers to validate this, but I think everyone can pretty much agree. Membership is down. Fundraising is down. Ballot access is down. The number of LP candidates winning at the local level, I believe, is way down. So using any of the traditional metrics, this Mises takeover has not been successful. Again, it's been 2 years. There's still a presidential campaign. This is the first year they'll be involved with a presidential campaign, right? Because when they took over in 2022, it was between presidential elections. So we'll see how it turns out for them. But one has to wonder how they plan on achieving success going forward. Now, we kind of touched on what happened at the convention in Washington and why things were chaotic there. Clearly, leadership, the Mises Caucus, Angela McArdle, have very specific ideas of what they want to achieve. And what they want to achieve, as far as I could tell, is some form of anarchy, you know, like, and the thing to keep in mind here is that when you listen to anarchists within the Libertarian Party, ANCAPs, anarchists, they will try to paint themselves as being the majority of libertarians in this country, that their particular belief system within the libertarian sort of universe, they speak for the majority. They don't. They are what I would say, they're the equivalent of the AOCs of the Libertarian Party. They're the equivalent of the far, far right of the Republican Party, meaning I think their number, again, this is my sort of assessment of it. I'm willing to hear anybody who's challenging me on this if they have solid numbers to give me. My assessment of this, and speaking, by the way, speaking with anarchists in the Libertarian Party, like the elder statesmen of the anarchists, you get this impression. Anarchists are the minority of the Libertarian Party, which itself is a minority. But they are certainly the loudest. They're the most well-organized. And if you kind of take them as being the members of the Mises Caucus, they're the loudest. They're very savvy on social media. But as Justin Amash once said in 2022, they're like the edgelords of the Libertarian Party, right? They seem to think that the way you run a political party is through successful memes and through successful trolling. And this is epitomized by the chair. It's no secret that I think I'm of the opinion that her strategy, and I personalize it to her, obviously it could be a whole bunch of the Mises kids put together, that they, when they sit down and they kind of think of this stuff, they're like, okay, this is what we need to do. I tend to think that they think the way you move forward is by taking a Michael Malice approach. Now, I love watching Michael Malice, but he's an anarchist. He's a trollster. I don't even know if that's a word. He's a troll. He enjoys putting people on. He likes making a farce of everything. But at the same time, he's not running a political party. If you want to do that, if you want to be the guy or the gal who gets out there, makes fun of people, tries to be edgy, tries to get engagement through flame wars or whatever, fantastic. But maybe you shouldn't be the chair of the country's third largest political party that way. Okay? So it started with this whole, look, I've said it, my partner William, I constantly say this to him. At first he doubted me, and now I think he may have come around on this issue, which is, I always viewed this from the start as it being a junior MAGA operation, meaning the Mises Caucus. You'll hear them complain about left libertarians, progressive libertarians, liberal libertarians, okay? And to me, first of all, I'll tell you what I think. I'll tell you what a lot of, say, political science professors and people who kind of spend their time debating these things all the time. There is no such thing as a left libertarian or a right libertarian. Typically, those terms will apply to people who look for excuses or exclusions for their libertarianism. So a left libertarian, for example, might be someone who says, like, I believe in libertarian principles, except when it comes to vaccines. I think vaccines should be forced on everyone for the greater good or something like that, right? Whereas a right libertarian is a libertarian, except when it comes to things like, hey, I don't want to associate with people of a different skin color. I don't like open immigration, which nobody has open immigration, but we don't like open borders. We don't like loose immigration and things like that. We're right libertarians. Or better yet, the most nonsensical term I've heard yet coming out of the Mises Caucus is they want to be libertarian nationalists, which is a little bit saying like, you know, I want to be a vegetarian carnivore. You know, those two words have opposite meanings. Why are you putting them together? And yet you'll hear a lot of these people from the Mises Caucus say this. Now, personally, I'm not, and this is certainly not true of everyone in the Mises Caucus, but certainly seems to be true of the loudest members of the Mises Caucus, seems to be that they're very, and being super kind to them, they use the premise of free speech as a way of being bigoted. Now, wearing my free speech shirt today, as I do this show, yes, bigotry as part of free speech, as soon as you don't aggress against anyone, yes, everyone has the right to say stupid things. Absolutely. I say a lot of stupid things too. I hope they're not stupid things like bigoted stupid things, and I hope they're not racist stupid things. But everyone has the right to say stupid things. And I've always said, I'd rather have my Christian white nationalists, my Nazis, my communists, all these, the fascists, I would rather have them talking freely because I want to know who they are. I want to know enough to either debate them, shun them, ostracize them, whatever that is, right? So they're right, you know, but they take that premise. See, a lot of bigoted people are very clever in that they'll use the premise of free speech to then build on the notion that their bigotry is somehow justified, that it's somehow not only allowed by free speech, which it certainly is, but somehow we don't have any sort of obligation, moral obligation, legal obligation, or any obligation to just be more human towards people. Which always struck me as weird. It seems to be that if you're against that, if you're a libertarian who says like, hey, maybe we should try not to be bigoted. Yes, we all have free speech, but maybe we don't need to be assholes about it. Maybe we don't need to treat other people so horribly. They'll start calling you a left libertarian, a progressive libertarian. And you see, that's their way of putting these things together. They're trying to associate that if you are against bigotry, de facto, you're against free speech. And thus, you're not a, quote, real libertarian. You're a left libertarian. But again, this is just their way of saying that, like, we believe in free speech, and we're using it as a shield for bad behavior. Why can't we call out the bad behavior? You know, this was a big issue at the Reno Convention, where immediately after the Mises Caucus took over, they wanted to take out the phrase, the plank, I'm not sure if it was an official plank or just part of the plank on free speech, where the LP had called out, bigotry, that they condemn bigotry. And McArdle got on, I remember this, it was part of, at least I saw it as part of a Reason podcast, where she got up and she said something to the effect of, well, we wanted it taken out because what's bigotry, you know, and you know, you can have all these woke people deciding what bigotry is. You know, and it took some maneuvering by Spike Cohen, who is someone that I guess the Mises Caucus had a lot of respect for. who negotiated putting something back in the plank, but it wasn't anywhere near as harshly, and it didn't call out bigotry specifically, but he tried to salvage it. I remember someone like Justin Amash, who, again, he's running as a Republican now, but he's always been libertarian-ish at best, and at the time he was part of the Libertarian Party. He's the only, when he switched affiliations when he was in Congress, he became the only Congress Libertarian Party congressman to have actually served. He said, look, they're right, of course, that everyone has the right to say stupid things. But what are you doing by making a point of taking out the anti-bigotry statement in your plank? What is it that you're trying to prove to the world? How does that benefit you? Right? It's like leaving it in does no harm. Taking it out makes a statement. And in the minds of most voters, taking it out, that statement isn't positive. And we're kind of seeing it now, right? Because, and again, this isn't indicative of everyone in the Mises caucus, but let me see if I could find something here. Let me add this here. So this came out of Libertarian Party New Hampshire on X. Now there's an issue in New Hampshire where the city council decided not to fly certain flags on a community flagpole. Among them was the Appeal to Heaven, I believe, flag. So the Libertarian Party New Hampshire, which is, by the way, the king of the edgelords, the king of the troll masters, and literally the headquarters of all the Mises teenagers that you could name. They say this is the woman who banned the Pine Tree Riot flag. She has a face and a name. They name her. And again, while I'm against doxing, this does seem to be a public official. She made a public policy position, so fair enough. You want to call her out. To achieve a free New Hampshire, people like this must be physically driven from New Hampshire. Listen to this wording. To achieve a free New Hampshire, people like this must be physically driven from New Hampshire. You must hate them, spit on them, do anything you can to rid this inhuman rot from our beautiful state. Now, you see what I'm saying? Like, how does that put forward any principles of libertarianism that I certainly am familiar with? How does that put that forth? Physically remove people. Spit on them. All for, when you think about it, speech that you disagree with. Right? At worst, it's a public policy decision that you have every right to campaign against. You have every right to protest. At best, it's a free speech decision on her part. She could choose not to promote that type of speech, which is represented by that Pine Tree Riot flag flying on the community flagpole. But the point here is that their response to a non-violent act that does not physically harm anyone and puts no one in danger of life, limb, or liberty, their response, they're promoting the act of violence. Spit on them, yell at them, physically remove them from the state. Now, I'm sure the trolls that run that account will be more than happy to say that, well, we were speaking metaphorically. No, you weren't, and it's not the first time. And if you think your goal is to those who know, and those who don't, who cares? Again, If you're like some incel living in a basement, and this is your podcast approach, go ahead. More controversy, more money, more views, more engagement, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Go ahead and do it. But supposedly you're running a political apparatus. Okay. And this is not something that's unique just to the LPNH, by the way. This comes from them, definitely. The Mises Caucus is entwined in all of this. And as I said before, they They are not people that, in my mind, now, if you told me they were MAGA Republicans, God bless them. Because MAGA Republicans or Democrats, for that matter, they don't believe in individual liberty. They believe in collective action to varying degrees. And as to my point about anarchy, anarchists are 1% of whatever the libertarians are in this country, okay? When you talk to old school anarchists, if you talk to Walter Block, if you talk to people like that, they'll tell you, like, hey, we have this theoretical construct, we try to live by it, but if we're being honest here, we make up 1, 2, 3% of all libertarians. Most libertarians tend to be, say, minarchists or classical liberals. Okay, they believe in some government. They just don't believe in a big government. Call them constitutionalists, if you will. But they're not left libertarians and right libertarians. Those are just political cover words for you to be able to deviate from this thing of placing the state above the individual. It just depends in what arena you can. So to me, that's what's going on here. Now, you also do have, and before we go on there, let me see, there's a comment here. William, I'm assuming he means the Mises Caucus, complained because that's who dominated the party and failed for 50 years. Can you blame their frustration? Yeah, I can blame their frustration because first of all, I wouldn't categorize it as a failure. You know, like a lot of people have pointed out, like Lars says this all the time, right? The system is rigged. It's built legally to prevent third parties from gaining traction, especially at the national level. Money is always an issue. We know that, right? So failure is relative in this case. And when you decide to frame it that way, okay. If I accept your point that the LP was a failure for 50 years, which again, in the form of a political history, is not a long time, but if I were to accept that, then tell me what this takeover has accomplished, which has resulted in fewer dollars, fewer donations, membership declining, loss of local elections, loss of county parties. Tell me what that's accomplished. See, that's the problem. And you see it with a lot of these kids after the convention. They thought they were going to go into Washington. They were going to steamroll everybody else at that convention. And what I'm saying is that, okay, what did they do? A lot of them quit. A lot of them quit. They didn't understand that politics is a profession unto itself. It's not that you get on this medium, on this podcast, and bitch and complain. Now, on top of that, I would even say the Mises Caucus should just form its own party because it's at odds with the majority of libertarians. See, there's this perception that the Mises Caucus, because they took over through crafty maneuvering and some people would say dark money coming over from the GOP and GOP donors and PACs, right? That when they took over, God bless them, they took it over. I've given them credit for the strategy of taking over the party. You have to understand, they're radicals. And I don't think they'd be upset at my calling them radicals. They're radicals, right? And libertarians have the problem of you're anti-government, yet you're running to run government as a political party, right? That in itself is a minor contradiction. Now, some libertarians will say, well, we're not anarchists, you see. We're minarchists. So what we're going to do is we're going to take this huge blob of a thing called the federal government, and we're going to shrink it and shrink it until it's at its smallest possible functioning state. And when you listen to people like Larry Sharp, when you listen to people like Lars, some of these so-called regime libertarians, that's their goal. Right? Like they know they're not going to get rid of the government overnight. We don't live in a system like Milei does in Argentina, where for the most part, he just goes afuera and entire departments disappear, right? That's never going to happen here. It's not going to happen in our lifetimes. So what you're hoping to do is to reasonably reduce government and constantly reduce it. You know, you want to audit the Fed, you want to try to get rid of the Fed. Great goals. Go ahead and try to do it. What's not going to happen is that when you're appealing to white nationalists, when you're at the very least tolerant of white nationalists, when you are advocating radical behavior, some of it violent, that's not the way to win over people. That's not the way how you convince people over to your ideals. So when you say the Libertarian Party was a failure for 50 years, it was a failure in terms of winning at the national level, but there was progress at the local levels. You know? So you have to look at it that way. And even if your goal, and I've always said this, even if the goal of the Libertarian Party was to influence political discourse, what's the better way to do that? To engage with people and try to talk to them about Austrian economics, to even talk to them about Chicago economics, right? Is that the better way? Or is it by calling them murderers, war criminals, agents of the state, feds, pedophiles, groomers? Is that the way you think you're going to win over an enlightened populace? Is that how you're going to win them over to your side? I mean, I look at this right now, what's going on with Chase Oliver. Now, the hot mic at the convention kind of captured what the Mises Caucus really thought about Chase Oliver. And it has nothing to do with much of anything other than he's a gay man. Okay? Because, let's put it this way, their preferred candidate, it has nothing to do with Chase being too, quote, too leftist or Chase being too liberal. Has nothing to do with that. You know why I know that? Because their preferred candidate, Dr. Rechtenwald, was a former communist. Admit it. I'm not making that up about him. He said, I was a Marxist. I started out life as a Marxist. Up until last year, Rechtenwald was donating to Trump's campaign. So if you're taking isolated incidents from Chase Oliver and saying, well, that makes him a liberal, what do those activities make Rechtenwald? By the way, your guy, your only guy. Because once Dave Smith left you high and dry, you were dead in the water. So who are you blaming now? Chase Oliver. So it's very obvious that the reason they cannot get behind Chase Oliver is because he's a gay man. And you see it from the various comments that are coming from the Mises followers, the Mises acolytes, and any official arm of the Mises caucus. You know, childish jokes about Chase's orientation. Now, they may have a point if they were correct about his position that, well, he took a position about puberty blockers, that he took a position about trans. Okay, fair enough. I mean, if that's open for debate, that's open for debate. I'm willing to if you make a serious debate. But when your debate starts out with he's a groomer, he's a pedophile, which seems to be the in rage now, does it make sense? Does it make sense at all? He's not a groomer. He's not a pedophile. No one's ever accused him of that. Now, we can have a honestly, I think you can have a debate about age of consent, medical autonomy, minor children. All that is fair game. I think those are perfectly good questions. And I think those should be asked. And you can say that to Chase. Like, say, hey, clarify your position. So I mean, you could do that. But what they're doing, I mean, you could see certain things that are just ridiculous, right? So whereas Chase will say, look, it's up to the parents. And if the parents think this is in the best interest of their child, then, you know, why should the state block it off? Which, by the way, what's more libertarian than that? Because I guarantee you, the same people who are saying, like, you can't force, you know, the state has to step in. The state has to step in. Okay. Can we define what the line is for the state to step in? Like, for example, if the state decides that you're putting your child at risk by not giving them the MMR vaccine, does the state have the right to step in the best interest of the child? Huh. I wonder if the same people think like that. I'm not pro-transing kids. I'm not at all, by the way. But why do you start out with the position that parents are not looking out for the best interest of their kids? So, like, as libertarians, we always say that nobody has a more interest in the well-being of their kids than the parents themselves. Even if you're a libertarian who really questions this trans thing, like I do, right? I question this wisdom of anybody who thinks that their kids are succumbing to some social contagion and they want to change their genders at 12 or 10 or whatever the case may be, right? But why not start out with the position of the parents make the initial decision if they bring their kid into the doctor and ask for this treatment, the doctor can also make an assessment. And if he feels there's any abuse going on, then notify the authorities. Why don't we start out with that base position? Why in this particular case are you starting out with the base position that the state has to step in? As a libertarian, I want you to explain it to me, not as people who think transing is wrong. Explain to me how, as a libertarian, Chase's position is let the parents decide. At least that's what he said. Whether you think he's lying or not, look, no one can convince you of that, right? You either believe him or you don't. But if you believe him that and you take him at his word, Can you tell me what is the libertarian position where the fallback position is the state decides first, right? We've all decided, hey, the state was wrong for forcing a COVID vaccine on everybody. We've all decided that. So what happens now if the state says, hey, that MMR vaccine helped wipe out measles, mumps, and rubella, and you're putting your kid at serious risk by not giving them that vaccination? Can the state, for the benefit of the child, come in and force that vaccination? I doubt it. Have someone here. Chris O. This convention was one of the biggest accomplishments of the LP we are being listened to. If Russ Ulbricht is freed, in that alone, the LP will have exuded more political influence than ever. Well, Chris O., I agree with you. If I had any reason to believe that would be the case. What in the world makes you think that Donald Trump would free Ross Ulbricht? He didn't do it the first 4 years he was in office. And by McCardle's own admission, they had talked to him about it back then. Now, she's playing it off like the poor guy ran out of time. He would have done it, but he kind of got stonewalled and they ran out the clock on this administration. BS, bullshit. He never wanted to free Ross Ulbricht because he probably took some poll. The country at large has no clue who Ross is, and they couldn't give a shit if he was in jail or not. That's the truth. Libertarians care if he's in jail or not. Most people have been fed the line that he was a drug dealer of some sort, that he built this website where people could order hits on other people, or that they could buy and sell illegal drugs. Okay? Plus, and Chris, thanks for your comment. Plus, the other thing about the convention was, stop and think. Why is it that no other political party invites their main rivals to speak at their own convention, and, part B, to do so without engaging their presidential candidate? So if your whole point was to expose the country at large, to expose Republican voters, to expose independent voters to libertarian ideals, how did this accomplish that? Right? You got Trump and RFK to figure out what you wanted to hear. Free Russ Ulbricht on the part of Trump and on the part of RFK had to do more with medical freedom, right? And here you go. Okay, great. Here's your things. Vote for me. And I have to admit, RFK's speech was a lot better than Trump's in that RFK's speech seemed to be more general. Trump's speech was more like, here's why you need to vote for me. Here's why you need to make me your nominee. Okay? And by the way, on Trump's part, brilliant. What did he have to lose by going there? What did he have to lose by going there? On Trump's part, brilliant. Like, people know I'm no fan of Trump, but I'll say this, brilliant for him to accept. Why wouldn't he accept? All right? But this is where I think McCardle and the other Mises kids, they fall short. Okay, they'll say like, hey, we're trying something new. We're trying something new. And it's something that I've seen in corporate, in my corporate existence, right? You get kids fresh out of school. They come in. They're, of course, they've got great ideas. They want to try new stuff. They can't figure out why the same things are being done the same way forever when it comes to processes. Why is it done this way? I don't understand. I've got new ideas. Then you know, if you're a good manager and they say, you give them like a little bit of a leash and you say, okay, go ahead and try it. And what happens? Within 6 months, they realize, wow, there's a reason why things are done a certain way. It doesn't mean that you have to stay stuck in the past forever, but you have to know where to innovate and where to understand that there's a reason why things are done a certain way, right? By the way, what's been the I saw McCardle on Michael Malice. She crowed about this. She crowed about it on Austin Peterson. Anyone that'll listen to her on all these radio shows. Hey, I accomplished my goal. More people are talking about the Libertarian Party. Well, yeah. Do you know how they're talking about the Libertarian Party? They're talking about it as an arm, as a MAGA arm of the Republican Party right now. And can you blame them? Because the way McCardle deals with her own candidate is ridiculous. She thinks she's being clever, or maybe she knows she's not being clever. I can't tell with this woman. But she'll go on radio shows, and here's an example. Let me see if I can pop this up. Okay. She went on Austin Peterson's show, who I think in 2020, if I'm not mistaken, could be wrong about that. It might have been 2016, ran for the VP nomination of the Libertarian Party. Now he's a Republican. He has a radio show, and he asked, McCardle was on there, and he asked her, you're working to try and use your presidential candidate who is left-leaning, can steal from Biden voters, to re-elect Donald Trump as president of the United States. So it's safe to say that you would like to see Donald Trump be elected so that he can fulfill those promises. Her response, I'd like to see those promises fulfilled. I have to be very careful how I speak about these sort of things. Okay? What do we think she means by that? What do we think? So in her response to that should have been, my only concern is getting Chase Oliver elected. That is the correct response for the chair of the Libertarian Party when asked that question. That should be her only response. Because guess what? I don't know when the Libertarian Party became the defeat Joe Biden Party. When was that the charter of the Libertarian Party? Defeat the Democrats sitting in the White House. When did that become our goal? Right? Plus, it's also super obvious that she wants Donald Trump to win. She thinks her future is to somehow cut a deal with Donald Trump to get him elected and to cut a deal with him. Which, again, Spike Cohen said this at the convention. If only there were a way to know how Donald Trump would rule from the Oval Office. If only there was some way we could know this before we voted for him. Oh, that's right. He was the president that did absolutely next to nothing that could be considered libertarian. He didn't free Ross Ulbricht. He didn't step in for Julian Assange. Right? You could make an argument that he didn't get us into any new wars. Check mark for him. But my point is, we know what he's like. He exploded the deficit. if you're a medical guy, who was president and who allowed the lockdowns to happen? So what I'm trying to get at is we kind of know what Trump is. So why has McCardle decided that the sole focus of the Libertarian Party is to defeat Joe Biden? Her focus should be to elect Chase Oliver. And here's a video of her where she's talking about this. I hope you can hear the volume. Yeah. Oh, you haven't. Really? We believe him. Has he? Okay. Okay. Okay, so I see some people in the comments saying the volume on that isn't coming clear. So basically she was saying people are going to complain, people are going to read, people are going to scream, but I am saying I endorse Chase Oliver in the blue states because he's the best way to beat Joe Biden in the blue states. In the red states, vote your conscience. Is that something that you want the chair of your political party saying? Now, I'm going to play this other video. Hopefully you hear the sound, but if you can't, it also has captions. So hopefully that'll help you. I'm sorry about the technical issues on the audio there, but let me see if we could get this to be. This is McCardle recently, I think within the last couple of days, on the Michael Malice show. So here. Right. Okay, so right now Malice is saying if he were at the convention, he would have done everything he could to see Chase Oliver come out on top. Why? Because that's the funniest solution, and the funniest is always the best, right? Now, again, understanding what Michael Malice is, Michael Malice, who I enjoy watching, by the way, is a funny guy. He's a full-core, hardcore anarchist. Believes in zero state, okay? Ask Michael Malice how he feels in terms of representing general libertarians. I'm sure he would tell you he's in the super minority of libertarians. But also to keep in mind, he's a podcaster. He's not a politician. He's not affiliated with any party. He's not an official. He's not a chair. He's not a delegate. None of that stuff, right? So he asks Angela McCardle. Let's see what he asks her. Okay, so her response to the question, was the Libertarian Party engaged in 4D chess to endorse Donald Trump? Her response was, I'm not going to use the word endorse. And she thinks she's being slick with that smile to let her followers know what's up, right? So here's the thing. As the chair, whether she believes it or not, her public response should have been, no, we had nothing to do with endorsing Donald Trump. I thought it was a good PR move to invite him to our convention. And, if it turns out, but hey, our candidate is Chase Oliver. Vote for him in blue states, red states, in every state. He's our standard bearer. She can't say that because she can't bring herself to say that. Okay. She still has to play nice with all the teenagers that make up the Beesies caucus. She doesn't want to lose her support. She only got by with 53% of the vote, down from 70 in 2022. Okay? Now, she could tell you, as she did earlier in that Malice interview, hey, you know, there were people running in and out. There were delegates that shouldn't have been credentialed and such and such. there have been plenty of threads dedicated to this. There have been plenty of emails that have been made public where it's very clear that from the start, her goal was to decredential delegates from states that disagreed with her. She had a playbook published on how to get Recktenwald elected, how to get Clint Russell selected to be the VP nominee. Okay. Clint Russell, another one of these guys from the Mises Caucus who loves troll behavior, said openly, hey, I want, at the time they asked him, like, why didn't you drop out from being VP? You know, once Recktenwald lost, you said you despise Chase Oliver. You would never vote for Chase Oliver. You're not going to support Chase Oliver in any way. Why did you still run to be his VP? And essentially, I don't remember the exact quote, but to paraphrase his meaning, he said, well, to run at odds with him all across the country, to make him look stupid all across the country. Now, you have to understand, this isn't even, like, in some ways, if the Mises Caucus, after losing, after seeing Chase become the nominee, if they had just said, we're not going to support this guy at all, we're not going to say anything, that's sort of like in poor taste, but in some ways it's acceptable. But for her, who is the leader, the chair of the party, to come out and start doing this nonsense about, well, I can't use the word endorse when we talk about Donald Trump. And I say Chase Oliver is the best way to get rid of Joe Biden. I don't understand. And then you wonder why people, you know, there's different ways the LP can look like a clown show, right? One of the ways is you have candidates wearing boots on their heads, guys who get up at a debate podium and strip their clothes off, having guys show up brandishing AR-15s or whatever. Those are ways that you could look silly. There's another way you could look silly, and this is it. When the chair can't be professional enough to accept the will of the delegates and promote, like, she has a fiduciary duty to promote and to certainly not harm the ability of the candidate to get elected. The fact that we all know he's not going to win enough votes to be selected president of the United States is not the issue. The issue is, why aren't you supporting your role? You see, if you want to be a troll, you want to shit on Chase Oliver all day, you want to be bigoted enough to say we don't want a gay man running for office or whatever your position is, do that from the comfort of a podcast, of being a talking head, write a blog, visit all your favorite nationalist shows, and go on there and tout how horrible Chase Oliver is. You can't do that when you're the chair of the party. And I think that's the important point. That's what we have to take away from this. And by the way, her whole inviting Trump, Vivek Ramaswamy straight up said, the key to the future is libertarian nationalism. And you actually have morons in the Mises Caucus who straight up are telling you he should be Trump's VP because he's the most libertarian guy he could pick. He knows how to dismantle the deep state. Vivek Ramaswamy is an opportunist, and God bless him if he thinks this is his way to move up. You have guys like Jeremy Kaufman, okay? He's another one of these guys that loves saying stupid shit, and he's another one of these guys that uses the cover of free speech to advocate for positions that, in my opinion, are very unlibertarian. Vivek Ramaswamy is the number one reason for libertarians to support Trump. Vivek understands how to do the dismantling that Trump wants to do, but doesn't have the orientation for. Okay? Why? Again, he's not an officer of the party, I don't think. I think he's a delegate. I know he's high up in the Mises Caucus. But he's one of these free state guys. You know, he wants to kick everyone of color out of New Hampshire. He only wants people of his particular political outlook to be residents of New Hampshire. He wants to carve out his own state, okay? I am not saying he doesn't have the right to those opinions. He has the absolute right to those opinions. But ask yourself, is Jeremy Kaufman and his ilk that seem to have found a house in the Mises caucus, are they representative of how you think the Libertarian Party is going to convince people over to the cause of individualism, over to the cause of liberty? Okay. That, you know, that that's all I'm saying. Because, like, you look at someone like, let's see, you look at someone like Tim Pool, who at one point I thought might be a somewhat based character. He says, libertarians support mercilessly beating children as long as government isn't involved. And he's trying to play off all the nonsense that libertarians themselves are saying about Chase Oliver and his stance on puberty blockers. And, of course, he was referring to Nick Gillespie, one of the editors over at Reason, who claimed that by Chase taking the position that the first and foremost decision to pursue certain treatments for minor children, especially non-permanent ones, fall to the parents first, that that is a libertarian position. Right? Tim Pool comes out and says, oh, I guess that means you're for beating your kids mercilessly on as long as government isn't involved, which, of course, isn't the position. But guess what? Thanks to the brilliant branding that the Mises Caucus and Angela McArdle did at the convention and the way they're supporting or not supporting their candidate, what else is the world supposed to think? What is the average voter supposed to think? So that's where I'm at with this. It's tell me how and why she is a capable chairwoman for the Libertarian Party. That's all I have to say. That's what I'm trying to get at. What are we trying to accomplish with her? What is she trying to accomplish? I mean, I know what she's trying to accomplish. She's trying to accomplish getting Donald Trump back in the White House. It used to be a conspiracy theory. Here's where I'll turn the table around on these anarchists and these truth seekers in the Libertarian Party. You know how you always say, show me a conspiracy theory that hasn't turned out to be true? You guys love saying that shit, right? Here's one that I have for you. There's been a lot of us that have been claiming since 2021 or so that the Mises Caucus is nothing more than a MAGA-fronted effort to make the Libertarian Party irrelevant, to essentially make it an arm of MAGA, okay? Because as we all know, Donald Trump and his advisors view the Libertarian Party as being the reason why he lost a couple of states. Joe Jorgensen and Spike Cohen beat the spread in a couple of key swing states, meaning that Biden, the difference of victory of Biden over Trump in those swing states was less than Joe Jorgensen got in each of those states, right? So working off the premise that you can get so-called right-leaning libertarians to vote for Trump, that, you know, we had a conspiracy theory that the Mises Caucus was funded, by figures sympathetic to Donald Trump. We were called idiots. We were called assholes. We were called, like, sore losers. Take your pick. But now, prove me wrong. Prove a lot of us wrong with what actually has happened. The same Mises Caucus that complained, correctly, I might add, correctly complained about William Weld getting the VP nod to run with Gary Johnson, the same caucus that complained about that move, that he wasn't libertarian enough, that same caucus is endorsing Donald Trump, who is 0% libertarian, and they're okay with trying to get RFK to run as a libertarian, who is maybe like 1% libertarian. Okay? What is the difference here? Right? It's just that you didn't like William Weld as a statist. You objected, again, correctly objected to him as a nominee. And I'm with you on that. but hated, but all of a sudden you're for Trump? Why? Like, I get it. Dave Smith left you in the lurch. And again, this is not a reflection on Dave Smith. If he stepped down for personal reasons, for family reasons, as I understand the case to be, I could be wrong, more power to him. I would always pick my family over some dopey political party. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind. So Dave Smith choosing to do that, more power to him. If you ask me, he did the right thing. But if your entire movement was based on Dave Smith and you had no fallback position and you couldn't figure out how to put and your default position was vote for Trump, you really don't deserve the keys to the engine, do you? Right? Like, I mean, why is that your default position? And I see some comments in the, is there actual groups and how much? Yes, this has been documented. Shame on me for not having it at the ready to share with you. Hit me up on X. I will be more than happy to point you in the direction. Now, I do not claim firsthand investigative knowledge of the results, but I have seen some paperwork. I have seen some threads that are about this. So I will say this. The paper trail that leads me to conclude that there was money funneled into the Mises caucus from GOP aligned sources is as strong as anything that shows me that say the COVID vaccines are not to be trusted. Okay, let's put it that way. So bad on me for not having it. I really didn't anticipate going off in this direction. So I apologize. I don't have that evidence, but it is out there. And I have seen it from several different sources. Okay. So that's all I'm saying, man. Can't we figure out a way where we can get back to all having the common cause of promoting individual liberty? And again, this is, look, Milton Friedman has said this. I'm sure a lot of other anarcho-capitalists have said this. Listen, the scariest part about liberty is liberty itself. More people are afraid of liberty, I think, than they are of, say, terrorism, which was a question I posed to Walter Block. I asked him, I said, what do you think people are more afraid of? And he literally, a professor, a guy who studied with Murray, he was Murray Rothbard's student. He hung out with Ayn Rand in a couple of her study groups a couple of times. OG anarcho-capitalist, who, by the way, the Mises folks have now shunned because he's decided that he came out in support of Israel. So for that reason, one of their own OGs is now... I don't know if he's been kicked out of the Mises Institute or if he's just been demoted from a senior fellow position. He wasn't quite sure. He knows he's not a senior fellow, but he doesn't know if he's been kicked out of the Mises Institute. Even he said to me, why are we doing this? Like, you know, he knew Milton Friedman. He could deal with people like Milton Friedman. That's the other thing. The Mises people seem to think that the only way you get into libertarianism is by praying at the altar of Ron Paul and Murray Rothbard, right? That literally to them, I would say it's like the Ron Paul revolution. They all fall to their knees for that. He is their living God, blah, 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 blah. Hate to break it to you. There are a lot of us on either end of that time frame that Ron Paul means nothing to me. Okay, I don't mean that as a negative. Please don't misunderstand my words. Ron Paul, to me personally, has nothing to do with me getting involved with libertarianism. My entree into libertarianism came through Milton Friedman. Okay, not an anarchist by any stretch of the imagination. That's how I got into libertarianism. When I talked to some of the younger generation libertarians, their entree into libertarianism was Gary Johnson. And again, I'm speaking in generality, so, if you find a 60-year-old my age, say, who says Ron Paul introduced him, don't take that as proof that that I'm bullshitting or something. I'm just giving you general guidelines here, okay? Ron Paul meant nothing to me, one way or another, neither positive nor negative. My entree was Milton Friedman. A lot of the people, as I do these interviews, is between this and my show, Big Questions, where I try to interview a lot of these guys. And let me pop this up for a little bit of pimping. When you talk to them, especially some of the younger ones, like Martha Bueno, when I asked her who got you into libertarianism, Gary Johnson, without a hesitation, it was Gary Johnson. Talk to Larry Sharp. I asked Larry Sharp, who got you involved? He's almost my age, maybe a little bit younger. He said to me, Gary Johnson. These Mises guys will accept no answer other than Ron Paul. If you're not a Ron Paul acolyte in the eyes of the Mises people, you have no business being a libertarian. Maybe if you said Rothbard, they'd accept you. Nothing was funnier than in Reno in 2022 when Justin Amash got up to a cascade of boos and he started reading a couple of quotes out of a book and everybody's boo, 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 boo. And then he said, and then he held up the book. He goes, by the way, the quotes are all from the person you guys are named after, from Ludwig von Mises. How embarrassing is that? That you forget that part of libertarianism is the classical liberalism. It is saying, hey, we are not only for free minds, we are not only for free markets, we are for free movement of people. Again, if you want to quibble about whether it's an Ellis Island setup, whether you want to quibble that, you know, maybe every state manages its own borders, you know, let's quibble about the mechanism. But the premise that we should be anti-immigration as libertarians, which is what the Mises folks are, is utterly ridiculous. And to hold that someone who says, let's have an Ellis Island type situation where you at least have ports of entry, legal ports of entry, where and we have the least restrictive immigration policy possible, where we say, as long as you're not a criminal, as long as you don't have a communicable disease, welcome to the U.S. We're not going to give you any welfare. We're not going to put you on a program. Get in here. Get to work. Guess what? That is as old as the Libertarian Party itself. And when you have a caucus within the Libertarian Party on that one issue of immigration that would rather see armed guards at borders shooting people down as opposed to saying, let's figure out how to get all these people into the U.S. as quickly as possible, put them to work, have them earn a living, give them the opportunity to learn. You're doing nothing more than being the same as every racist group throughout our history that has at one point or another found a reason to blame specific immigrant groups, whether it was the Germans initially, whether it was the Irish after that, the Italians. Same thing. The Asians at one point on the West Coast. There's always been an immigrant group to blame. And guess what? None of it has resulted in our destruction. It's only made us stronger. It's made us wealthier. It's made us more productive. Okay? Now, do you have to pair it with fewer government programs? Of course. And look, I'm not an open borders guy. But if I were to tell you, I do agree with the Ellis Island model, and let's say have X number of Ellis Island type stations around the country. That's my position, actually. If you were to call me open borders, you are flat out lying. And yet the Mises folks are doing that to slander or libel, depending on how it's done, Chase Oliver. Chase Oliver has never been open borders. He's always been, as he says, an Ellis Island guy. So I can't emphasize enough that this Mises caucus, by and large, represents a radical faction of libertarians in general. Radical faction, okay? They are not the majority of libertarians in this country. They are the loudest, I'll give them that. They might even be the best organized, especially on social media. Greasy wheel, what is it? The squeaky wheel gets the grease, or you know that old saying. So definitely, you got to watch out for that. Now, before we start wrapping up, let me also pimp out another show here at Grumblings Media. If you want to find out more about Chase Oliver and Mike Termott, I had the pleasure of interviewing them long form, each one of them for over an hour. Please go to the Big Questions with Big John right here on Grumblings Media. You could see the address there, shorthand, bqwbj.com. Big Questions with Big John. See how that works? Listen for yourself. I asked them the questions. I asked them about their positions. I asked them to categorize themselves for me in terms of their philosophy, libertarian philosophy. So, hey, if nothing else, go listen to them. Go listen to those interviews. Decide for yourself. Don't listen to a couple of trolls on the internet that are trying to make up your mind for you. You can decide whether you believe them or not. I'm not going to tell you who to believe, right? If you think Chase Oliver is lying to you, if you think he has a secret agenda to to steal your kids and turn them gay, or whatever it is that you think pedophiles and groomers do, that's up to you. I you know, that's your conclusion. That's your deductive reasoning. Go ahead. But at least be fair and listen to what the guy has to say. Don't take the word of a bunch of bigots out of New Hampshire about what Chase Oliver is or what Mike Termott is, right? Because he's catching a lot of grief because he was a police officer. Now, for most of us, being a police officer, especially a good police officer, isn't a deal breaker for someone who wants to be vice president of the United States. But you have to ask yourself, why would, like, it's one thing when you say, like, defund the police. You know, now that I think about it, that's interesting. Because would an anarchist support defunding the police? You would think they would. I don't know if they have. And if they did, why would they be against BLM asking to defund the police? And again, I'm not even commenting on the validity of those positions, mind you. I'm just trying to find the logical consistency or contradiction here. So, you know, think of that for yourselves. When you're considering all these issues, think of that for yourselves, I guess, right? But anyway, Mike Termott is someone I've interviewed a couple of times. I like the guy. I think he's a straight shooter. He's an Austrian economist. Yes, he did work for, he did work not for the government. I think he worked with the government on economic issues in the 80s. He became a cop at 49. He's had an eclectic career, and he's someone that I think when you ask him questions, he's very libertarian. He's just not an anarchist. See, that's the other thing. Again, I can't emphasize this enough. Not being an anarchist does not disqualify you from being a libertarian. You have to keep in mind, if you're thinking of typical set theory, the libertarianism in general is the superset. Anarchy is a small subset of the higher set of libertarianism. And you also have classical liberalism in there. You also have minarchy in there. You probably have constitutionalists in there as well. Okay, ANCAPs go in there, agorists go in there. But the overall set is libertarianism. Okay, I think that'll be all for this week. Thank you for those of you that have tuned in. Thank you very much for joining in. I always appreciate anyone who takes even 5 minutes to listen to me gab and rant. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate you checking out Grumblings Media. Go to grumblingsmedia.com. Check out all our great shows. For those of you that happen to be interested in voting for Donald Trump, we also, my partner William Del Pilar is a conservative. He puts out some great conservative content. He loves pointing out what he views as wokeness in pop culture, in government, in the media. So check us out there for that. We also have a couple of great sports podcasts at Grumblings Media. We have our buzzer beaters who talk about all real talk from our buzzer beaters, the Cisco boys, about everything that has to do with hoops. So check out Buzzer Beaters. If you're into the NFL, another great duo, live Tuesday nights right here at Grumblings Media, the Blindside Blitz. Jim and Joe do a fantastic job tackling the NFL issues of the day. So Grumblings Media, we're building up some content. There's always something for somebody here at Grumblings Media. So hopefully you'll come back again next week. Next week, as of today, it's confirmed, Spike Cohen will be our guest to talk about his great efforts in with You Are the Power. And perhaps he'll give us some of his thoughts and reflect upon the speech he gave at the LP National Convention in Washington.